This is Purple Radio on demand.
This podcast is too long. Hi. Welcome to Who's Not Podcasts. I'm Ollie. I'm here with Bertie.
Hello.
Harry.
Hello.
And Joseph.
Good evening.
So, we're here today to talk about Wild Blue Yonder. In my opinion, an absolutely brilliant episode. Generally, what are people's thoughts? Oh, spoiler alert, before any thoughts, spoiler warning!
I'm good at literally everything.
Yeah, spoiler warning for Wild Blue Yonder and the Star Beast and theoretically all of Doctor Who, but especially Dr. Donna episodes.
Yes. Once again, we are recording before the next episode, so you can't get any spoilers for the giggle.
Yeah.
But we may speculate.
Yes, and also, like, we've all seen the next time trailers and things, but has everyone here seen?
Yes, I've seen all the trailers.
Yeah, so we've seen next time trailers and whatnot, but we've not seen the episode. Right. Yeah, what do people think of Wild Blue Yonder?
Really good. I really enjoyed it.
Really good. Harry, 2K23.
It was a very good episode.
Yes. Suitably spooky. I like a good spooky Doctor Who episode. Horror is my favourite genre, so having a nice little spook is very fun to watch.
I think I've not been that scared watching Doctor Who since I was about 10.
Were you hiding behind the couch?
I wasn't. There's not room behind our sofa. So we open right into the episode. The TARDIS crashes into a tree. An apple falls onto some guy's head. Lo and behold, it's Isaac Newton, the discoverer of Mavity.
No way!
I love Mavity.
Which is, of course, a brilliant recurring joke throughout the episode. Mavity.
And hopefully from now on throughout the show.
It took me a little bit to come to terms with the fact that that's now canon, but I absolutely love it.
You know how Disney has gone through and edited certain, like, Star Wars movies and Lilo and Stitch? Do you think they're going to go through and edit every time in Doctor Who they say the word gravity for it to say Mavity? Because I think it would be a brilliant use of resources.
I don't think they will, but it would be hilarious.
I mean, they don't have any Doctor Who before the Star Beast on Disney Plus, but they should.
Do they use the term gravity at any point in the Star Beast, and will they edit that?
I loved a bit where the Doctor said something about a gravitational field, and the Don goes, what? No, a mavitational, or whatever it was.
Because earlier in the episode, Donna mentions it, and the Doctor just sort of looks at her, and just goes, okay.
We'll go with that.
Which is hilarious to me. Yeah. It's amazing. We meet Newton, randomly, in a pre-title sequence.
In an episode with only 4 cast members.
Yeah.
One of them is Isaac Newton.
Which is amazing.
Less than 5 minutes.
Oh, no, there was the old lady Isaac Newton had a little chat to. So that's
true.
Five.
We've got about 3 seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Of course, there's been some unfortunate response to the casting of Isaac Newton.
There has. It's not great. There has been a great deal of backlash because the actor cast as Isaac Newton is not white.
And people were very angry about that.
Yes, because it's not historically accurate.
Because that is the most important thing in Doctor Who, is that it's historically accurate.
I would also like to point out...
Historical inaccuracies in my Doctor Who.
More likely than you think.
Indeed. There are, without doubt, so many historical accuracies in Doctor Who. I would like to list 3 in that scene alone. Yes, you are quite right. Isaac Newton was not white. That is a historical inaccuracy.
Oh, I thought you meant in real life. I was like, what?
No. In real life, Isaac Newton was white.
Okay, just double checking.
In the scene, he was not.
But the real question is, in real life, was Isaac Newton hot?
Oh, well.
Sure.
I don't think I can answer that.
Are any STEM students hot?
Bertie with the slander on the podcast.
I don't think any of us on this podcast are attracted to men, so I don't think we can answer this. No. But yes, Joseph, you're in historical inaccuracies.
Sorry.
It is also a matter of record that Isaac Newton was a social recluse and quite depressed, despite being so happy in this scene and greeting whoever the old woman was.
Housekeeper?
With such wonderful housekeeper, somebody... And smiling so much at the Doctor and Donna and seeming so happy, it was not even close to historically accurate to his character.
Mm.
And third, Isaac Newton did not coin the term gravity.
Mm.
It was a term...
Or mavity.
Or mavity. He didn't coin either term. He discovered the rules behind it and explained it, but it was a term that had been used for the force that draws things down to the Earth for years before he was born. If you would like to complain about the historical inaccuracy of Doctor Who, you are welcome to do that.
Mm.
I think you're an idiot because that is not the point of the show, but you are welcome to. If the only point of historical inaccuracy you have an objection to is the colour of the character's skin, that's where it comes from, racism.
Yeah, that is, like, I can't see a way to justify arguing about that and not arguing about the other things in that scene alone beyond racism. Also, and obviously that is not a justification.
I'm pretty sure the apple thing is apocryphal.
It is,
yeah.
Supposedly, I'm pretty sure he discovered, or worked out gravity when he was in Cambridge, not at the house that it was filmed.
Yep,
that
that's also
scene.
True.
Yeah. So it was a very silly opening scene to an episode that was tonally very different. But
yes, it was a wonderful scene.
The main problem with the scene is how people have reacted to it. Nothing wrong with the scene itself.
Yes.
Isaac Newton's whiteness has nothing to do with his discovering of gravity.
I was gonna say, I think that's a more general point about the race swapping of characters, is you can race swap any character in any way, as long as the race of that character does not inform the character or the person, if it's based on a real person.
Mm.
The reason you get a lot of people who complain about this going, well, you'd never do that to a black person, is because based on the historic and even the modern racism inherent within society, the only people... having a personality and a character that is not informed by your race is a privilege pretty much exclusive to those of us who are white. Because if you are not white, then the very existence of the world in which you exist, and we all exist, means that your race will have informed your life and your personality in a way that it doesn't for those of us who are white in the same way. And that is why you cannot race swap freely both ways in the same way.
Mm.
It's not because of some perceived anti-white racism the other way. It's because it genuinely makes a difference to the characters if you do it the other way.
Yeah, if you have a non-white historical character, then they will have received a lot of racism in their lives, and that will have had a big effect on them. And then making them white, it doesn't
it
quite make sense.
Who they are and their experiences,
yeah,
as a person, in a way that it doesn't so much. Or rather, it would, but the way you're portraying it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because you're only focusing on the small section and ignoring that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of, like, the Star Beast had amazing transgender representation. The only problem is how people responded to it, yeah, with transphobia. So, yes. Yeah.
We're seeing a bit of a recurring pattern.
Guess what? People are bigots.
But I would say, I think it is a wonderful thing, not that we're getting this reaction, but that we are having the content within the episodes in order to have this reaction.
Yeah.
Because the fact that Doctor Who and RTD is willing to just openly put this on screen front and centre and not worry about the backlash that he would have known he would receive, I think is great, and I hope it continues.
Exactly. If there are angry bigots tweeting on Twitter, then you've probably done something right.
But it's not called Twitter anymore.
I will call it Twitter till the day I die.
I'm calling it Twitter until Elon Musk refers to his child in the correct way.
Yeah.
Which will mean it will forever be Twitter.
Very
anyway.
Anyway.
After this pre-titles, we had the beautiful title sequence again.
Yes.
See, interestingly, since the Starbeast podcast, I've seen a lot of online people complaining about the title sequence. I don't want to go into it too much because that was the last episode thing, but I just want to reiterate that the title sequence is amazing and everyone else is wrong.
It's incredible and it's so expansive and I
want
adore
it longer. I know why it's not longer.
Yeah.
Harry sat there and explained to me why it's not longer.
I think I did.
Oh god, I'm muddling up you two. It's the hair.
We both got curly hair. Very different volumes of it, but we've both got curly hair of a similar colour.
It was because people will just skip it when they're binge watching.
That is true.
But has RTD thought about what I wanted in this scenario, which is a long, long title sequence?
I would love to see a fully animated, like, full-length title sequence with middle eight and everything.
Yeah,
the
I'd love that.
The title sequence has been shorter since, like, series one. So yeah. I don't think it's really binge-watching.
Well, I mean, it got significantly shorter for Jodie Whittaker's era. Jodie Whittaker's title sequence was much shorter than anything that came before, and this one was similar.
I can't say I've ever noticed the difference in length from...
Oh, I noticed it immediately. Anyway.
Title sequences as a whole are now just shorter in TV.
Yeah,
you definitely notice it's longer when you watch Classic Who because it's like often the full theme.
Yeah.
I want the full theme tune. I will be writing a letter to RTD.
When we watched The Star Beast, I didn't notice that the outro was the full theme tune with the middle eight, and I only noticed when we watched this one.
Fake fan.
Yeah.
Well, I was like trying to change the channel at the time.
Fake fan!
Oh dear. Anyway, we then land on a spaceship. The tone completely changes. Some say this is jarring. I don't really mind it because the pre-title sequence is quite separate from the episode anyway. Yeah. And so we land on a spaceship. They briefly look around the spaceship and the TARDIS, I can't say what I want to say, it goes off. It goes off. And the Doctor explains this is the HADS. Now, for those of you who don't know, the HADS is something that has been in Doctor Who a few times. I know of two times the HADS has been in Doctor Who previously. I don't know if there are more.
Which two are you referring to?
So, in Cold War, they're on the submarine. The submarine's leaking, the ocean's crashing on top of them. And the HADS causes the TARDIS to dematerialise and go to the South Pole. And in Magician's Apprentice, which is familiar, the TARDIS gets, in quotes, destroyed. And at the end of the episode, the Doctor explains that this is the hostile action dispersal system and zaps it with a sonic, brings it back together. So it's like an updated version of the HADS.
Yes.
So it's a fun little bit of continuity.
Yes, those are the only two I can think of in New Who. There are sort of variations on it in Classic Who. So obviously at the start of the Mind Robber, you have the TARDISes being surrounded by lava and... It's not an automatic system there, but the Doctor sort of, like, flicks the switch and it's like, run away, go anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why they end up in the land of fiction, which so sort of seems like a sort of early prototype of the HADS system,
which
has now become automated.
The hostile action displacement system.
Yeah.
Sorry.
redundant acronyms.
I apologise, Joseph. That was unnecessary. So we see more of the 14 and Donna's relationship, which is so amazing. I love 14 and Donna. They're so sweet.
How open he is with platonic intimacy is amazing. And the fact that, I don't know whether it's just because of like what side of the internet I'm on, that nobody is sexualizing it is such a big thing for me. Because they are just two best friends, dare I say platonic soulmates, and they are... No one's sexualizing these platonic forms of intimacy, which is something that a lot of fandoms can't do. As soon as anyone shows any form of friendship in a fandom, they're like, ship, which is all well and good, but it feels slightly arrophobic.
Yeah.
So to have 14 and Donna hug, a little forehead kiss, the, like, I missed you so very much, and nobody's going, ha, they're going to date. It's such a beautiful thing, and the ease of the intimacy between them as well shows that intimacy is not just something for romantic partners. I don't know if RTD was doing that on purpose, but
I love it either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wanted a mate.
It makes me so glad seeing it normalized, men and women being friends. And there's like no romantic or sexual connection. It is simply a friendship.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful. Like,
yeah, exactly. I'm trying to not say just friends, because they're not any less close because of it. The Doctor, like Ten and Rose, are clearly like romantically in love, and it would be wrong to say, in my opinion, that they're any closer than Ten and Donna.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that that is deliberately written to be like that. It's not all. They are just friends. It's never going to be as deep, where it's very clear that it is just as deep. Just slightly different.
They have an incredibly deep and intimate love for each other, and that's friendship. And friendship, when it is like that, is wonderful. And I love having that shown on TV.
And I was talking with Jo, and she was saying quite accurately, this is the real distinction between 10 and 14, is 14's emotional openness that you didn't see so much with 10.
Mm.
And whether it's genuinely different characterization or whether it's a natural extension of where 10 would be anyway with what he went through is hard to say, but it is a clear distinction between the two that 14 is much more emotionally open than we've ever seen before.
Beautiful, because one thing that really annoys me about 10 is how emotionally constipated that man is. Like, someone get him to some therapy. Let him talk about his emotions.
I think it's a little bit of culture has moved on, society has moved on, and RTD has become more aware of these things. But I do think he has consciously realised this is where the Doctor's character should go, especially with this particular face back. But, you know, I've noticed a comparison in the past where people say, when you compare similar scenes with 10 and 11, 11 is much more open. And I think it's possible 14 has been through that and realised that, and obviously that experience being very closed off as 13. And it seemed like Chibnall was trying to do character development with 13 becoming more open, but she never really did. But I think you can then extend that to 14 and go, he realised he had a toxic relationship with Yaz, and so is being more open now as a result of that.
It's gone right to the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
It is.
Talking about Chibnall. Just never where you want to start a sentence.
Oh dear, where is this going?
The mention of Flux, I like the fact that they went for it, and in that one scene we had more emotion from the Doctor about Flux than we did in the whole Flux era. But the fact that they didn't shy away from it.
Yeah, I think it was brave, because I did think RTD was just going to ignore it and move on. But the fact that he's addressing it, and I've seen people online going, why would you make this canon? Why wouldn't you just decanonize it? And I think that would have been wrong. But I wasn't expecting it to just be, this was a part of the show, now we're moving on, we've got a different showrunner, a different Doctor, because parts of the show get left behind, you know.
Mm.
The Doctor never mentioned being on trial again after Trial of a Time Lord. There are parts of the show which just stop and you move on and they don't need to come back.
Mm.
But the fact that RTD is addressing this and its consequences and what a big deal it was, I think is very brave and very admirable. I think that's important, because I have complained previously, I can't remember on podcasts or in chats, about RTD's slight cowardice in terms of some of the way he's written things and things he's shied away from. But I think this is a brave and correct decision that I do admire from him in terms of his writing.
I love it for so many reasons, because like mentioning the Flux and the Timeless Child, and for one thing it shows consequences, and that's one thing that RTD is very good at, is showing consequences and showing how like things don't just happen and we move on. That we do have consequences, and half the universe being destroyed should have consequences, and within the Chibnall era
It was never mentioned again.
It literally was never mentioned again. There were no consequences to the entire universe having been destroyed.
Either universe related or individually for the Doctor.
Yeah, there was no character development there. And having him so explicitly go, like, carry around this trauma about the universe was destroyed because of him. And that is so wonderful. And the bringing up of, oh, I was born in Gallifrey, but you weren't, were you? You don't know where you were born. And that's a bold move, and I love it. Because the fact is, I wish the Timeless Child wasn't a part of the show, but the fact is, the Timeless Child is a part of the show. And if you don't address it, that will make it worse.
I also think it's interesting, and I don't know if this is deliberate, if this is to be explored, that the decision to explore it and go into this further and have the Doctor assess this part of his past that he thought he knew that might not be true. Forgive me.
No. You are forgiven.
Is done with David Tennant's face.
Yeah.
In the same way that in the 50th, David Tennant's face was the youngest to have to address what he did in the Time War at Gallifrey and consider changing it then and the way that affected him, even if that face didn't necessarily remember it straight away. I think the idea of bringing back a face that has previously addressed such a major change in his history, almost, you could almost see RTD going, it's done subconsciously by the Doctor in order to allow him to know it's okay to address major changes in his history and get through them and find what works and is better. And I've no idea whether that's deliberate or even crossed RTD's mind, but I do like... I'm not a big fan of David Tennant keeping on recurring and always being placed above other Doctors. I have various problems with it for the show as a whole.
And David Tennant was there twice.
But as a justification for it, I do think having the face that has already been through a version of what he is going through now is an understandable thing and could be quite nice to see.
Whether it's deliberate or not, it is wonderful, and I think it is, it's very nice, and I'd not really thought of that at all.
And is he going to be the shortest lived incarnation of the Doctor ever?
That is a good question.
It seems like it.
But it's quite ironic that the vainest of the Doctor is now probably the two shortest lived ones.
Yes. Christopher Eccleston's was probably shorter.
Are we suggesting... I'm not sure.
Shall we not go into the Doctor's age right now?
I think we worked out that Jodie's is probably the shortest because it's a maximum of kind of 40 years because Yaz is with her the whole time.
True.
And we see that Yaz...
Apart from in the prison.
...aged significantly, but other than in the prison, which we see her enter and leave...
Wait for Big Finish. They are going to say that she dropped her off and then had 200 years of adventures just between that.
Exactly.
Which Ten says is aged quite often.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so it depends how much we believe Ten's assessment of his own age.
If you believe Ten's assessment of his own age, then he only lived for about 7 years, 6 years. Yeah. Roughly.
Man was lying.
But
I don't accept the age the Doctor gives at any point as any indication of
that is entirely
the time that has actually passed.
That's fair. I think there's so many wonderful things. I'm going to bring us back to the episode, I think, to Wild Blue Yonder.
I didn't know that was a song.
Wide Blue Yonder.
Nothing. I thought it would have been mentioned on one of the society group chats. I might have missed it.
No, it was news to me.
Yeah.
I
thought it was like a saying or something. I think it is.
Yeah, like I recognised it as a phrase, but I didn't realise it came from a song.
I knew that, and I knew it because I was told it, but I don't remember where I was told it. And if Joseph didn't say it, it was probably not in a society group chat.
Yeah. Well, who else are you talking about Doctor Who to?
I don't know. This is why I'm confused.
Do you have other friends, Ollie?
I mean, I can only think of...
Have you betrayed us?
I can only think of one friend I have who really likes Doctor Who's Not in Whosock, but I don't think he would have known that.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Under the table Doctor Who knowledge. Who are you talking to? Who are you rizzing for this information?
I probably just watched a YouTube video where it was mentioned.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, we've got the Doctor referring to Isaac Newton as hot.
We have.
Which is, I'm loving it. We love the gay agenda.
The thing is, the Doctor's never been straight.
No.
The thing is, as a general rule, I don't like the Doctor having romantic or sexual attraction, but I think when it's in a queer way, I think it does a lot more good than harm.
I was going to say, I think I'm always of the opinion that I would prefer the Doctor to be Ace, if not Arrow.
Yeah.
However, given the Doctor does explicitly experience attraction to various people throughout the series, and up until now, that has exclusively been women.
Yeah.
Whoa, don't do Captain Jack Harkness dirty like this.
Is not at any point a suggestion that the Doctor finds Captain Jack attractive.
Maybe not explicit.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely indications that nine does.
Nine and Captain Jack.
I feel like the way he interacts with him in sort of, you know, the parting of the ways and
there's an implication that he knows that Jack is attracted to him and is enjoying that, but I don't think there is at any point an implication that he is attracted to Jack.
We are going to rewatch series one together, and I'm going to point out every time that I'm like, that man gay. Every time.
But this is the first time the Doctor has explicitly been attracted
that
to a man.
That is certainly true. And I think if the Doctor is to be attracted to people, then it would be regardless of gender.
Yes.
And so I am... While I would rather it wasn't there at all, given it is there, I am glad to see it being put in both directions, as it were.
I saw a very funny post online talking about this, and they were like, the first Doctor did not riz Ian for you guys to say. This is the first time he's queer. And you know what? Maybe one did riz Ian. Who's to know?
Justin, my dear boy.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. Be real.
I mean, you know, I saw Be Real. I thought I wouldn't mention this on the podcast, but now you
too
have.
Late.
This is too getting late. In the final edit, by the way.
Of course it is. So, those of you who saw Bertie and Dolly's Be Reals, this is it.
Oh, I accidentally took a beer.
This is that moment. This is that moment. They're taking the photo. I hate this. Yes, but also, even if we ignore one, two holds hands with Jamie.
Oh regularly. Yeah. Two and Jamie are definitely...
Two and Jamie are very definitely both gay.
Yes.
There is no question.
That's
there.
Not platonic hand-holding?
No, nah. It's very, very definitely. Very definitely.
Two was not gay for you to say this is the first queer Doctor.
Not to mention... Three and the Delgado Master.
Oh yeah, that's
there
sexual.
Was, yeah, there
that
was nothing
sexual.
Platonic about that.
So the Doctor's always been queer, but this is the first time of the Doctor being explicitly queer.
I don't know. Have you not seen Ten Johnson?
I feel like that was less so.
So we find out the Doctor is, in his words, like that now.
Colm's reacted to our Be Real.
Amazing.
Shout out to Colm. Come back to Who's Song.
So, where is it that the Doctor says this? It's in a corridor. A very long corridor. A very real-looking long corridor, definitely.
The corridor.
The CGI.
Yeah.
That green screen.
I mean, it's not perfect, but also it's so much better than anything we've seen before. On Doctor
yeah,
Who.
Yeah, but I kind of... If it was really, really, really awful, it would be funny. Like a lot of older Doctor Who is. But the fact that it's trying to be good and fails, it's like, meh.
For me, I don't really care. Like, Doctor Who, I would like it to have the best special effects it can, but the fact that when it doesn't really bother me. It's like...
See, I think it's quite good, the effects. You know, I don't...
The effects... Over these two specials, in general, are amazing.
It doesn't take me out of the episode. I don't look at it and go, oh, what a horrible green screen. Oh, wait, I'm watching an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was just sort of starting to approach the sort of Uncanny Valley part,
yeah.
Where it's so good that it is creepy. Which works for the episode.
I was going to say, given the episode...
Yeah, you want it to be quite creepy. Before we talk about what I think you're trying to get to, I want to talk about the concept of where they are. They find out they are on the edge of the universe, a place which, unlike what a lot of people online have been saying, is a place they've never been before. No, it does not count in the Doctor's Wife, because I think some people didn't understand what RTD was trying to say. In this episode, they are physically in space. It's just beyond anything in the universe. It bothered me initially that is very scientifically inaccurate, but then Tennant was very explicitly like, human race at the moment, like, you don't think that this is true, but, like, you know nothing yet. At which point I was like, okay, fair enough, RTD. You've acknowledged that this isn't what our science says. I'm going to let you have this awesome concept.
Yeah, yes. This is a concept I want to express. I don't know the science for it. What do I do? I know. I tell you the science doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, and I love that. And I love that they are... It's just space. You keep travelling out far enough, and that's where you get to. Whereas, say, the Doctor's Wife, they are in another universe. It's just in a sort of, like, higher dimensional way. It's close to our universe and smaller.
Also, although that's the explanation given, the Doctor then explicitly says, it's nothing like that.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no explanation given for that, because the one explanation that is, the Doctor goes, imagine this, it's nothing like that.
Yes, but the fact is, Wild Blue Yonder is sort of, it's set within the space of our universe, just outside of anything that we know.
Yeah.
Whereas Doctor's Wife and other similar episodes, or like Tektayun's ship, are explicitly not in the universe at all.
Yes, they are explicitly outside the universe.
Another thing on where the episode's set, the very first door that opens, you can see through it something that looks suspiciously like a TARDIS console, and I want to know if that was deliberate or not.
Yeah, because it just turns out to be a pillar.
Yeah, it's just a pillar.
But I thought it was going to be a TARDIS console.
Did they deliberately make it look like a TARDIS console as they were walking through?
Or did they just have to, like, repurpose some things they had left over?
Well, it would have been CG.
It's
one of the pillars from the CG corridor.
And when we see it properly, it doesn't look anything like a TARDIS console. No. It just looks like a funny pillar.
It's probably done on purpose then.
Probably.
Because I thought, like, when they landed, I thought they had landed in a TARDIS. I thought we were going to get, like, some inter-TARDIS drama. Maybe the Master pops back.
Was not going to pop back.
No, but, you know, I really like Sacha Dhawan.
Yeah, I'd love to see, when the Master does return, I'd love it to be Sacha Dhawan, but also I hope he doesn't for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got the concept of the edge of the universe. To me, it's terrifying, but especially the way they talk about with their dialogue and Murray Gold's music and everything makes it so just the wide open, complete void and emptiness. Not the literal void.
Nope.
But, like, that void and emptiness, I think it's terrifying, and I think it's wonderful. And then, we get two different scenes cutting between them, and both of the scenes have the Doctor and Donna.
And it's a real testament to David Tennant's acting
that
the second he stepped back into that room, I instantly went, that's not the Doctor.
I had that, except with Catherine Tate's.
Yeah, I had that with Donna.
Yeah. Because it's a testament to RTD's writing, because I think different people worked out what was going on or had different theories throughout the scene, and I think the fact that the way RTD has executed that is incredible, because I thought initially that they were just cutting between two different scenes at different points in time, and it was just like a weird writing narrative device. I mean, when Donna stepped in, I was like, that doesn't feel like Donna. And then I thought, maybe I'm just wrong.
Yeah.
And I thought they were just cutting between. And then when you start to realise, like, my arms are too long and, you know, we realise that they're not them and we hear Tennant's voice overseeing Tennant interacting with Donna, it's mind-bogglingly terrifying and it's genius.
Not the first time David Tennant has pulled off such a trick. In my favourite horror comedy movie, Nativity 2. He drew upon that, I'm sure.
But it's terrifying. It's wonderful. I also love the little speech that the Doctor gives in that scene about the TARDIS and where it goes when the HADS is activated. It doesn't quite make sense to me, because you'd think the TARDIS would go somewhere and then immediately go back to the correct time. But also, it's the way RTD writes, and it was so beautiful and poetic and it just felt right.
Can we talk about David Tennant skateboarding with the TARDIS?
That's the end of the episode, but sure, why not?
He skateboarded with the TARDIS.
He skateboarded with
I love that. That made me so happy.
It was full on Back to the Future.
Yeah.
It's things
hovering slightly.
It's things that give me the feeling of RCD has got to the point where he doesn't care about doing things that people are going to complain about and go, oh, that's kind of stupid. Like, he will just do whatever he wants, and I love it.
He's moving the entire TARDIS with one foot.
Well, to be fair, we know that from Flatline, that sort of thing can happen. He moved it with just his hands in Flatline. And
it was a lot smaller, though.
He explicitly said the TARDIS is always lighter.
Yeah.
Like, I think the implication from Flatline was that the TARDIS is sort of the weight of an actual police box, or similar.
And it was already hovering at this point.
Yeah, so you didn't have to worry about friction.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It lives rent-free.
The visual of it is brilliant.
But yeah, can we talk about the not things?
We must talk about the not
or
things.
Or the no things, or whatever you want to call them. They are terrifying! Oh my word!
They're proper based in nightmare sort of that traditional nightmarish distortion where shape doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
And you never know quite what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was absolutely terrified of those things. And, like, the amount of things that had to come together to make that work. David Tennant and Catherine Tate had to act on point, and they did. Russell T. Davies' dialogue was perfect. You couldn't have done this in RCD1 because the special effects wouldn't have been good enough. It would have just looked stupid.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think to the Almost People. It's similar kind of body contortions, and it just looks silly. And in this episode, there are points where it looks a bit silly, but I think it sort of it just about managed to pull it off to the point where it was
silly in a sort of nightmarish way.
Yeah, it was slightly comical and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah,
and it was. They feel very much like the Midnight Creature. They come from somewhere that we can't or haven't ever been to, and we don't really know what they are, and I love that they don't... The way that they don't understand things in our universe and the way that they work, like the fake... The not Doctor losing his tie and then not realising that tie should still be there on the floor, or them not quite understanding if they should be able to cross the line of salt or not. Like, it's weird, and them not being able to manage their size and, like, are uncontrollably getting bigger and bigger. Like, that is...
It getting cold as well.
Yeah, that is... It's so uncanny. And then you know they're doing it again when you see the Doctor and Donna's breath.
Yeah. But even that's taken away from us shortly after that scene.
Yeah.
So they no longer mention the temperature, so I assume that they've...
I think they explicitly said that it's not.
A little later, it didn't change temperature again.
The fact that during the course of the episode they become more and more convincing doubles of the characters is just so creepy.
And I love the fact that I love the concept of that they're not intelligent in the sense of in the context of our understanding of the universe, they're not intelligent because they don't understand anything, but it's almost as if by copying people's minds and they're seeing their memories, they learn to understand things that way, and seeing them learn is terrifying. And I love the concept, and again this feels very Midnight, of using the Doctor's mind against him, because one of the things I love the most about the episode Midnight, which I talked about on the Midnight podcast last year, is the fact that the Doctor's voice is sort of his greatest weapon. The fact that he talks, he doesn't use guns, he doesn't shoot things or bat fight things, he uses his words, and that was turned against him in Midnight. In this, he outthinks his enemies, and that was turned against him. The fact that him working out what was going on was actively bad.
Yeah, this is a problem the Doctor explicitly cannot think his way out of.
Yeah.
Because that will think his way into it.
Yeah.
And the not things goading him into thinking about it. Brilliant.
And it's so... Like, that's one thing the Doctor can't help. You can not blink. You can... You can not... Like, whatever.
You can not breathe. You can not think.
The Doctor can't not think. The Doctor can't just turn off his brain. And I also love that they tried the not thinking thing and they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Ah, it's
yes, I always enjoy when they work out the solution, they do it, and they just can't. It's,
yeah.
It's one of the things in media that I really love.
I was never quite convinced in Time Heist that they would be able to not think like that. And in this, they tried it, and they couldn't. Especially the Doctor. Because he's always thinking. And it makes me think of the beginning of Once Upon Time, where the Doctor is... There's a little internal monologue at the beginning where she's talking about how she's always thinking about how to get her friends out of problems. And fair play to Chibnall, that was a decently written bit of monologuing, I think.
I really liked it, yeah.
And that being an episode that was not long before this one, I think tied in very well, because we've really got the idea that the Doctor is constantly thinking so much faster than we can even comprehend.
Yeah.
And that was making the not things so much more dangerous.
I do like at the end how the only way to stop them was to blow them up.
Yep. Yeah, which was happening anyway. Yeah.
There's another what would have happened if the Doctor and Donna didn't turn up episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, nothing different. Like, they would have been blown up anyway.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, again, it's one of those... The Doctor and Donna being there only caused problems. It didn't
and
solve anything.
Like, a lot of people don't like that. I don't see why that's a problem.
No.
I literally can't see why that's a problem.
No, exactly. Because the point is, they are there. That's why there's plot and danger and stuff, is that
yeah.
they are there. Yeah, sure. You could not tell the story.
Like, they didn't choose to be there, either.
Yeah. Like,
not really their fault. True.
Like, it gets to the point where they're worried about they need to stop the not things getting back to our universe, but for the large body of the story, it's about their jeopardy and about them trying to survive. And I love it. I said in the Starbeast podcast, I hope this episode is much more slow, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the arms and Donna's extra knee were done practically.
I couldn't believe that. I was shocked when I saw Unleashed and saw that was the case. Like,
giant
what?
Arm.
Yeah, again, that was like slightly comical but terrifying.
Yeah. It also adds to those kind of innocuous but terrifying lines of Doctor Who, along with you've now got my arms are too long.
Yeah.
Along with Are You My Mummy and Hey, Who Turned Out the Lights?
Yeah.
It's that kind of breed of it's a completely innocuous line.
Yeah.
But if you know the context, it's terrifying.
Exactly. I mean, it's really funny because those were the two lines I thought of, and then I've seen those two lines referred to so many times talking about this episode.
Yeah.
I find that hilarious.
Yeah, it's because those are the lines. It's because they're the lines everybody knows, and they're iconic.
Yeah.
And I think this will be too.
Mm. Yeah, it will be. And I love that the Not Doctor and the Not Donna, when we first meet them, and I mean, not when we first meet them, when they meet each other again, and they don't know if they're real or not, and we know. I love that we have a different level of knowledge to the audience, because, I mean, to the characters, because we know neither of them are with the real ones, probably. You don't know for sure, but probably.
It would have been a slightly weird conclusion to that scene if it turned out that the Doctor and Donna were together and the Not Doctor and Not Donna were together.
Yeah. But you don't know which is which, and I love that you don't know which is which until... I think the point that I realised was when the real Doctor started pouring his heart out about the Flux. I thought, this is a brilliant character moment, you wouldn't waste that on a character who's not the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Donna couldn't have worked that out, because that's not how that works.
No. That's a very meta understanding of what was going on.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And, yeah, it's terrifying. And the way they absolutely mocked each other with, like, the Not Doctor contorting himself into a weird shape and completely mocking Donna with the, no, Mummy and Daddy. And then the Not Donna, like, the Doctor going to hug the Not Donna, like, he's realised that this is really his friend. And then his face, when she turns out to not be real, that's one of, like, the best facial expressions I've ever seen. Like, that was acting. Like, his... Because, as 13, he spent so much time pushing people away from him. And in general, they've spent so much time pushing people away from them. And he's finally learning to be loving of his friends and having them close to him. And then he goes to hug his sort of platonic soulmate. And she's not real. And you see that pain in his face, and it hurts so much.
I'm excited to see how this will affect Shuti Gatwa's doctor.
Mm.
Is he going to be more caring, loving? Because he's described his relationship with his companion as two best friends on a schoolyard.
Mm.
So that suggests like a level of like intimacy and love between them.
Mm.
But I don't know. Like, would this one scene make it harder for the doctor to trust again? Because it's not Donna's fault that she wasn't there. But to have that taken away and then mocked when you were being emotionally vulnerable would make walls go back up.
Yeah.
I don't know if this will have long-term implications. But then again, I think it will have something because RCG is too good at writing characters for that to have no effect at all.
I want Donna to be mad about being left behind.
Mm.
Because he took the wrong one.
He did, in fact, take the wrong one.
I don't like that because it's the second week in a row that there's been like a fake out of Donna's death.
I'm lucky.
I wouldn't be surprised. This feels to me like he's going to kill Donna off in the giggle, and he's faked us out twice. So, like, we might think it's a fake out a third time, and he's almost foreshadowing it. It feels like Donna death foreshadowing.
It does. I remember when we were talking about when we all first found out that Donna and Ten were coming back.
Mm.
We were like, he wouldn't kill off Donna, but he would. He definitely would.
Yeah, because like for months I've been going, it's an anniversary. He'll end it on a slightly more feel-good note. It will be more positive. And the more I see and the more I hear, the less confident I am in that belief.
Also, the end of Starbeast, I didn't like how they explained Donna surviving the Metacrisis. So is it just that... And he will know that. He's a good writer, and he's only learned how to write better since Doctor Who. Like, it's not saying that his era of Doctor Who was rubbish. It's my favourite. But as you... Like, David Tennant is a better actor now. He is a better writer now.
Mm.
He wouldn't fake out on us, like, completely. Or is he deliberately making us say, oh, fake out, so he'll just continue as a little joke? Because he's a little joke kind of guy.
He is. The thing is, he could do either, and he could make me believe that either was the right decision.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
There's a line in one of the trailers where the Doctor says something like, I don't know if I can save her this time. Have we seen that yet or not?
No.
I don't think we have.
And it's... Yeah, I didn't particularly like the scene in this episode, to be honest, because it felt just... It felt like it was just playing our heartstrings for no reason.
It felt redundant.
Yeah,
it didn't add anything to the plot, but I think it might add something in the giggle, and if she does die, then I will be like, okay, for one thing, she's died anyway, so it was a fake-out in that moment, but also it could have been very interesting foreshadowing. So if she dies in the giggle, then I think I will look more fondly on that scene, but as it is, I think it annoyed me a bit.
Both a fiery death. Too.
Yeah,
like with the same sort of colour palette. So are we needing to look out for fire during the giggle? Are we gonna be like, oh,
she's just gonna falls in a bonfire.
she's just gonna like Anakin Skywalker to death.
Yeah. Also, Donna's reaction to being left, she's like, after like the initial, oh, thanks for remembering me, she didn't go off on him.
Mm.
Do you think that character development on Donna, she's no longer the temp, you know...
Shouting at the world because no one will listen.
She's in fact a mother with a daughter who loves her, a husband who loves her. It looks like her relationship with her own mum has gotten a lot better over time. So she no longer feels the need to shout? Or do you think we're going to get the shouting next episode?
I don't know.
I don't think we will get the shouting about that next episode.
It seemed to me at the end like they, like it's just shared trauma. And I think the shared trauma between them will just mean they both... Yeah, I think that the Donna will understand.
And she can clearly tell that things have happened since.
I did love the subversion of how, because usually you'll be able to, in things like this, you'll be able to tell the duplicates apart by one of them won't quite understand something or, like, understand the memories, or they might have access to the memories but not the deeper meaning or something like that. And in this case, that was what we thought was happening, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I loved the subversion of that. Yeah. I also find it hilarious that Donna's answer to why Mrs. Bean is funny is because it's the name of a vegetable given to a woman. It's the thing is, like, I don't think that's why it's funny, but, like, it's the kind of, like, stupid thing you would say in a completely panicked situation like that.
When you're trying to explain why something is funny, when the answer is, it just is.
Yeah, but also in a situation where you're about to die, the doctor might take your evil duplicate with you, you want to sound convincing, you've been on edge for an hour, you are terrified, and you're not going to answer. Some people would, but I would not answer rationally. I'd just be like, I don't know.
I think I'd probably be like, I'm a comedic genius and save my life!
Yeah.
0.06 of a millimetre.
Yeah, that seemed like a little bit...
Yeah.
Was he just saying that to her to make her feel better, though?
Here's the question. What would have happened if the doctor reached down, grabbed Donna's hand, dislocated her wrist as he pulled her in, so her wrist extended very slightly, and the TARDIS registered it, and he actually threw out the real Donna?
Donna's dead already.
The thing that I did like about it was that it ties in with her arms being too long.
Yes.
Yeah. So they escape in some beautiful visual effects. Actually beautiful visual effects.
The lights coming out of the TARDIS windows.
Oh yeah, that was a bit funny.
I quite like them.
Yeah.
They've sort of given the TARDIS a more sort of angelic feel.
Yeah.
I suppose because it was coming to save their lives, but there was something funny about the fact that had to happen twice.
Yeah. But I think that's, if they stick with the same sort of appearance, that's going to look really good in the Christmas special.
I assume that that's not going to keep happening. I assume it's just going to appear normally. I think that was just for that episode.
Yeah, like the light coming out of the window.
Oh,
if
right.
If they keep that kind of thing.
As opposed to just spinning and descending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the light coming out of the window and stuff, if they do that in the dark and the snow.
Yeah. Mm. That could be good.
Looks so pretty.
It's going to look so Christmassy.
It's going to be on so many gift sets on Tumblr. I'm so excited.
It's going to feel like Christmas Doctor Who is properly back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one other thing, of course, near the end, there was a conversation between the Doctor and Donna about that previous conversation regarding the Flux and the Timeless Child.
Oh, yeah.
In which Donna says she can't see all of the memories of the Doctor.
It's like looking into a furnace.
Do we believe her?
I don't know, because there's been a lot. She's had a lot of character development. But conversations are hard. Talking about trauma is hard. And maybe she was hoping that 14 would open up and talk about it then. But I could also fully believe that she was telling the truth.
Yeah, I think either is possible. Mm. I'm more inclined to believe she does know, but doesn't want to bring it up herself and wants it to be something that the Doctor brings up to her when he's ready.
It was so sad that he was still closed off about that, but in a way that works rather than was just annoying with 13. Because it was like she was supposed to have character development surrounding this, and she just didn't. Whereas it feels like 14 will.
And it feels like 14 was, I've just been through a huge trauma relating to this, trying to explain it to you, which wasn't really you. I'm not ready to do that again right now.
Yeah, which, to be fair, is consequence of what I was saying earlier, like, will it have consequences? It's had consequences this episode already.
Yeah, I think that was a direct consequence of trying to have that conversation.
And when they land in front of Wilf and...
Wilf again! Wilf is back! Sorry.
A lot of the Doctor's companions look at the Doctor like he's hung the stars. They look at him like he is a god, which is something the noble family doesn't do very often. But Wilf does look at the Doctor like he's hung the stars, but the Doctor looks at Wilf like Wilf is hung the stars.
Mm.
And the pure joy you see on all three of their faces, that can't be acting. That felt so real.
Oh, I think it that was beautiful. I think it was genuinely, like, David and Catherine were thrilled to see Bernard Cribbins again.
Every single thing I've seen someone saying about Bernard Cribbins is saying that he's a brilliant person.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... So, for those of you who don't know, I saw an Instagram post by Russell T. Davis where... I'm going to try and find the post so I can read out what he said. But essentially, this is the only scene that they filmed with Bernard Cribbins.
Not through lack of want.
Yes, but because he unfortunately passed away. Yeah. He passed away before it was possible to film more scenes. And it's such a shame. It is.
I'm so glad they got something with him, though, because...
I'm going to read...
I'm glad it was something that they could use and didn't have to write out.
Yes, yeah, it wasn't some random scene from the middle that they had to cut.
I'm going to read what he said on Instagram. "Farewell, old soldier. That's good night and goodbye to our beloved Bernard. Wolf is mentioned in dispatches next week, all safe and sound, don't worry, but that's the only scene Bernard was able to film. We had a wonderful time. We'd never lost touch in all these years, so I phoned him up and asked him to come back. He sniffed and said, 'Let me see the script.' We had a wonderful read-through with 120 people, at which he was adored by one and all. A lovely dinner in Cardiff where he regaled us with tales galore, twinkling as ever. Then the shoot in Camden. You can see in Unleashed and read in next week's Doctor Who magazine how much he enjoyed that. And then we had a little more written, but it wasn't to be. A 93-year-old... The old soldier had given us his best and stepped away. Night, Bernard, and thank you. I love you."
He is one of those iconic actors who is beloved by everybody I've ever heard speak about him.
Yeah.
He's done so much from kids TV to Doctor Who prior Wilf. To Wilf. You know, he did CBeebies for a bit.
Yeah, he was the voice of the Wombles.
He was also Old Jack in Jack's Boat, I think.
He was.
He was a Doctor Who companion for one story, and he's one of the most beloved that we've ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, originally he was just, like, some guy in a store, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was so wonderful, he showed back, and at the end of the episode, in the credits, this episode is dedicated to Bernard Cribbins. We knew that one of the specials would be, but... It was so beautiful.
Stop us all from crying in that TLC lecture theatre. The only issue I had with Doctor Who Unleashed this week is that they had such a touching tribute to Bernard, and then the next scene was thumpy music, and I was
it was quite the tonal shift.
Yeah, it really was.
Like, everybody was like, you know, I was wiping away a tear, I was like, oh, I love Bernard so much, and then they were like, dubstep!
Can I just say, scrolling through Russell T. Davis' Instagram, trying to find Bernard Cribbins, there's a picture of Mr. Tickle saying, "My arms are too long."
Mr. Tickle is a not thing.
And there's also a poster saying Mavity for the film. Yeah.
Excellent.
RTD posts a lot. I recently followed him on Instagram. I can't say that word.
I don't know what word you are aiming for.
Stop whispering the word. Okay. My listeners might be able to hear it. I'm going to have to bleep that out now in case that got in.
I'm sure it didn't get in.
Yeah, but like... You said it quietly, but like some people
can hear it from over here.
Some people will have really high quality headphones and might be able to hear that when I can't. So I will have to edit and bleep that out now.
That seems like a skill issue on their behalf. Who can afford nice headphones?
It's still a swear.
I think the word you were aiming for was meme lord.
No, that's Lottie.
That's true.
I think the word you were aiming for was poop. Poop head. He's a real poop head.
It's not a poop poster.
Ah, yes. Oh, right, yes, that.
Harry's face palming again. If anyone's doing the Who Sock Shot Challenge.
Does anyone have any final thoughts on this episode before we move on to questions?
Have we mentioned the salt yet?
Very briefly, I brought it up. That is hilarious.
We can't say too much.
I wish I hadn't done that thing with the salt.
Me too, David. Me too.
Do we think this is going to be the explanation for how the Toymaker is back?
I don't think so.
That was terrifying.
It turns out, like, I'm a pre-Hartnell Joseph.
Which one of you is the no thing?
It's me.
My nose is too long. My hair is too long. My hair is too curly.
My arm is too long.
I do feel like in the Starbeast podcast, I joked that the Meep's boss, the Meep referring to the boss, was RCG going, I'm going to do a story now. It feels the same thing with him going, I wish I hadn't done that thing with the salt, invoking a superstition on the edge of the known universe. Oh, it doesn't matter. That's never going to come back. That once again, is RTD going, I'm going to do a story.
I don't think it can be the explanation, though, because it's a sort of inconsequential jinx which can't have any direct cause and effect.
Mm.
Oh, there'll be a that's long-winded really explanation.
No, exactly. I haven't seen the original story, so I don't know exactly how the toy maker works. But is there any element of
I have only seen the final part, because that's all that exists on iPlayer. Ah. But not really. Okay. He sort of has his own sort of pocket universe realm outside of reality where he controls it and they play games.
Yeah, he makes people play games, doesn't he?
And yeah. And if they lose, then they're trapped or they die or whatever. It's unclear what the rules actually were from only the final part.
Recently, the official Doctor Who YouTube channel uploaded a clip from the episode on YouTube, which was the resolution to the episode. Yeah. And I've watched it a few times. It was a bit confusing because it's the resolution to an episode I've not seen any of. But from what I could glean, it seemed like, as you say, the toy maker has his own universe and he plays games against people. Usually they lose. Occasionally they win, in which case the universe is wiped. The toy maker being an eternal and having an indestructible mind, he starts again in a new universe. And in the Celestial Toy Maker, the toy maker, his universe is destroyed and the TARDIS team managed to escape, because usually when the universe is destroyed, the victors get killed as well.
But they're in the world as it is destroyed.
But by some confusing mechanics, the Doctor and companions escaped in the TARDIS.
Yes, spoilers for the Celestial Toy Maker. He manages to voice activate the last move of the game so that they can be in the TARDIS and fly away instantly as they win.
And it sort of feels like Bradley Walsh as the creepy circus guy.
Yes.
It's got that sort of vibe.
That same sort of feel to it.
Because he's got some kids trapped in a dimension somewhere.
And Neil Patrick Harris, from what we've seen in the trailers, looks like he's going to be amazing as the toy maker.
Yes.
He does a lot of musical theatre, and this feels like a very musically theatred role.
He dances with the Doctor in the trailer.
Yeah.
But also,
it's going to be very camp.
It is. Oh, it is.
David Tennant's really leaned into camp characters since playing Ten.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say that like you didn't play Casanova beforehand.
Yeah, you've got me there.
It's not a new thing.
But you know, since Crowley.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Good Omens.
Please do not spoil Good Omens. I've only seen 3 episodes, and I intend to watch more.
Well, you know, you've got the gist of it. Crowley, non-binary.
Oh yeah, Crowley, David Tennant is camp. Yeah, that is definitely true. Yeah,
I'm still waiting for Michael Sheen to turn up.
I am so excited for the Toy Maker though. And also, interestingly, at the end of the Celestial Toy Maker, it's very explicitly said that the Toy Maker's mind was not destroyed and there will be other meetings.
Yes.
And that's not happened, and it's been, what, like 59 years? I don't know exactly when that episode aired.
I think it happened in one of the 50th anniversary books, maybe, but not in the show.
Ah, okay, but like not canonically.
Depends on the definition of canon.
Using the word canonically with regards to Doctor Who is always...
Anyway.
Doctor's half-human, guys.
Not on screen.
The Doctor is not half-human. he was joking.
His mother's side.
I'm going to move on to podcast questions now.
I think we should.
We're over an hour. Usually I would make an effort to be under an hour, but first
it's
of all, this
special.
Is also, I want the joke about this podcast being too long to be correct. So
I think you should just add 5 minutes of silence in somewhere so that it's too long.
Anyway, Or shall I just slow down the audio for the whole thing?
Yes.
This podcast is...
No, don't do that.
I think you should. Don't be a coward.
Cormac
just fractionally to 99% speed.
Yeah.
Cormac wants to know, are your arms too long?
No, I'm 5 foot.
My arms are too long.
We've established my hair is too curly.
They look normal length currently. Mm.
My arm's too long.
I think they're 0.0007 of a millimetre too long.
One of Joseph's arms...
It's significantly longer than the other.
Oh goodness, much like the not Donna.
My arm is too long.
Anyway,
riveting question.
Joe wants to know, what would your evil duplicates do? How would they trick you?
I am the evil duplicate.
I was going to say, do you mean how would I trick my nice duplicate? No, that's a good question. They wouldn't need to do much. The idea of me not thinking is almost as laughable as the doctor not thinking.
Yeah, no, me too. I constantly think. I can't not think.
The fact that some people actually do not think terrifies me, and I don't believe it. Sometimes, like, up to my brother-in-law, I'll be like, oh, what are you thinking about? He goes, nothing. And I'm like, no, everyone's always thinking. And then we had a long conversation. No, some people just have no thoughts.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
Harry, do you have no thoughts sometimes?
I don't know.
you've had no thoughts about having no thoughts.
Do you always have something going on in your head?
I think so. I feel like I wouldn't notice if there wasn't anything because I wouldn't be thinking about it.
True, but you might realise afterwards that you hadn't been thinking about anything.
I don't know. Sometimes when I'm asked what I'm thinking about, I say nothing just because it was something really dumb.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, how would your evil duplicates trick you?
I feel like trick probably isn't quite the right word because the point is they were trying to scare them.
Yes. And make them think.
Yeah. And so that their brains were running faster. And I feel like they decided that the best way to scare those two was to trick them and confuse them between who was real and who was not and do it that way. Whereas I don't think that's necessarily true for everybody. Mm. For instance, if you want to scare me, you make me witness myself doing things I do not want to witness myself doing. That was not the implication I meant. That was not the things I was thinking of, but I realised how that sounded.
But how that sounded, I feel like, is correct.
That would also work, yeah.
It's always immediately after you say something that you realise.
Yeah.
No, you really did make that worded. Joseph just watching himself on a romantic date with someone.
That would work. That would work.
Like the ghost of Christmas. Is it Christmas present? When they see Tiny Tim's family eating a nice warm meal.
Yeah.
I think given how scared I was off that episode, I think doing something similar to what actually happened to me would work. I don't know if there's something that would work better, but that would definitely work.
I'm permanently confused, just like as my general state of being, so I don't think that would work on me. But I am terrified of ghosts and demons. So I feel like if they pretended to be a ghost or a demon, I'd be like, no. And that's how they'd get me.
Also, I've just realised, I'm going to take a little break from the podcast questions. We've almost got through the entire podcast without mentioning the robot.
Yeah.
Jimbo! There's not much to say about Jimbo.
There's nothing to say
about
Jimbo. Except that he's Jimbo and he walks very slowly.
I love Jimbo.
I relate to him on an emotional level.
I was a bit confused about why they didn't understand slow in the first place, but then I realised, because Joseph explained it, that it relates to the idea that... they were trying to speed up the Doctor and Donna's thinking to duplicate them. They just work well with high-speed environments, and it ties into them not understanding the universe.
Yeah, I think it's also connected to this sort of the object permanence, like the Doctor removed his tie and then didn't realise it was supposed to stay there. When things are slow, it's like they happen at different times, and therefore holding what has happened and what is happening is too difficult for them. If things are sped up, it's like they're all happening at once. Therefore, they can process everything together.
Yeah, exactly. It's it makes me wonder, what would we be confused about if we went to their universe? Or, I mean, they're not necessarily explicitly from another universe. We don't know where they're from, which is... But wherever they're from. Just sort
of from the nothing, weren't they?
Yeah.
But to me, that implies there isn't just literally nothing. But also, the point is it's ambiguous. The point is it's ambiguous. Yes. So they could be from another universe. They could be from something that's beyond. They could be from literal nothing. It could be anything. And I love that that is... I think that's very deliberately there isn't an intended interpretation.
Yeah. I think if we were from wherever they were and experienced what they do, I think the most confusing thing would be the absence of cause and effect.
Because yes.
If everything happens at once and past and present can't be held together, then cause and effect cannot exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we inherently wouldn't understand a universe or whatever without cause and effect.
Just on Jimbo.
the lovely little boy.
When we saw Jimbo in like a poster or something, I was thinking very like Marvin the Paranoid Android. Yeah, it looks a lot like
the film version with Martin Freeman. Yeah.
So I was really expecting to be something like that, but then just just walks.
Also, I keep thinking of things I want to say, even though we're in the middle of podcast questions. I really like, and I've missed this because I think Moffat and Chibnall forget it all the time. If the TARDIS isn't there, we shouldn't understand the languages that are going on unless there's a reason that we would. And if the TARDIS is there, we should understand the languages. And Moffat and Chibnall seem to forget that all the time. Yeah. But RTD pretty much never forgets that. The only case I can think of where that's not really held true is the Jadoon speaking Jadoonese in The Stolen Earth.
Yes.
Because the reason they speak Jadoonese in Smith and Jones is because they're on the moon and the TARDIS was on Earth.
Yeah.
But it feels like they should be translated by the TARDIS. But other than that one case, RTD never forgets about the languages in the TARDIS translation. Moffat and Chibnall forgot it all the time. They just didn't even think about the languages, it seems like. But I like having RTD back just for that those small details. Like, he remembers that. And we had a countdown in an alien language the Doctor didn't understand. The Doctor comes back and it says one.
The TARDIS leaves again and it says zero in the other language.
Mm.
In fairness, in defence of Chibnall...
I'm sorry.
There's a window there.
He does address that because he injects them all with translators at the start of the Ghost Monument.
Yes, no, he does. He does. Okay. I assumed that was only for the course of the Ghost Monument, not for his entire era.
It's never established. But.
Okay, fair enough.
That feels like lazy writing.
Also, when did they get injected with... Oh, no, it was in the pods in the spaceship, yeah.
Yeah.
But Moffat forgets that frequently,
does forget it.
This feels like the same sort of leap that some people were making before this episode, where they were saying, oh, the Jadoon undid... Not the Jadoon. The Ood undid the flux because the Doctor mentioned it very briefly, and then it just happened off-screen.
In Flux, it was very ambiguous, and not in the sense of all clever ambiguity, in the sense of Chibnall just didn't think it through, whether the Flux was actually ever fixed or not, and if it was, how? Whereas Russell has made it explicit that, no, half the universe has been destroyed.
Has he?
He
made it explicit, half the universe was destroyed.
Okay, technically...
Whether that was reversed or not is still unclear.
Technically, he didn't explicitly say it, but I feel like the suggestion of the sentence was that half the universe is still destroyed.
I think it could still go either way.
It could, but I would be... I think mine... Okay, fair enough. It wasn't explicit, but my interpretation of that line is that half the universe is still destroyed.
The emotional impact that it would have on the Doctor would be lesser if it had been undestroyed.
Yes, I agree.
It might have been, but equally you could justify that it isn't, even if it had been undone.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we carry on with the
questions,
Ollie?
Yes, I'm sorry. I keep having thoughts because I love this episode
so
much.
Stop thinking, Ollie.
No, I can't.
Stop thinking.
Lorna wants to know, what thing would you use as proof only you could know about it?
That sounds like you're baiting us into answering a question to replace us with clones, Lorna.
Yeah, that sounds like a very dangerous question to answer on a podcast. I don't think I will.
No, thank you.
Also, interestingly, the point of a lot of the interactions in that episode was that you can't do that with these creatures.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Which I think is brilliant. But yeah, no, Lorna, I'm Yeah, I don't think I can answer that. I don't think any of us can answer that by definition.
Not for something that will stay out on Spotify for any clone of mine to hear.
Yeah.
Jacob wants to know, which Donna companion team would handle the not things the best and the worst?
Which Donna companion team?
Did I say Donna companion team? Which doctor
and
companion
I
team?
I absolutely want to see Donna and Jamie doing this. I think they would nail it.
Yeah, no,
Donna
which
and
doctor
the fake
companion
Jamie
team?
From,
yes, yes, specifically Donna and fake Jamie from The Mind Robber.
I want Donna and Yaz just because I want to see Donna shout at Yaz.
Of the bit where Donna's biting herself and she's like, oh, this is really therapeutic.
I think, I don't know, I think that 13 and Yaz would handle it very poorly.
I think they would.
They are extremely emotionally stunted and would not be able to deal with that. And I think they would not be able to, because they didn't realise until the end that the TARDIS would come back for them. They thought they were sacrificing themselves. Would 13 and Yaz do that?
They're very...
I feel like any Doctor Companion duo would, but they'd be the least likely, possibly.
Yeah.
They might be better at working it out, just because the fake 13 might accidentally actually tell Yaz something.
13's like, I love you, Yaz. Yaz is like, nah, could never be
me. Right.
It's
not right. I'd love to see it with 12 and Clara.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like anything where 12 has to face off against himself... it would always be a fascinating story.
Will Clara hit on herself?
Absolutely.
We've seen evil Clara before, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And anything that pushes Capaldi's acting is amazing. Heaven sent, I'm looking at you.
Capaldi could act it, so could Jenna.
Yeah.
Jodie's a wonderful actress. I don't know whether I think she could do it as convincingly.
I don't
know. She was... very, very briefly, she was quite good as Time.
I don't think she was scary as Time. I was not remotely intimidated. She was just, I don't know.
I don't know if she was scary.
That scene was
but,
just really weird.
But she did feel like a different person, was my point.
Yeah, yeah.
So clearly she can do that kind of...
But she very explicitly needs to be scary to do this right.
That's true, and I haven't seen her try to do anything scary, so I don't know whether she has that range in her.
Yeah.
Same with Mandip.
Would they would have to scare them to speed it up, but it would be a different sort of scared, because it wouldn't be 14 and Donna, it would be 13 and Yaz.
Maybe 13 and Yaz would just have to have an emotional conversation to scare them.
I suppose we'll have to... have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if with Nine and Rose, you would have very similar Time War trauma-esque things as with the Flux and Timeless Child trauma.
I don't think Rose would react the same way to Donna simply just because Rose is a 19-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Whereas Donna's done a lot of emotional development.
She's 40 at this point?
She's old enough to have... No, we don't know the exact age of Donna's daughter, Rose, but we can guesstimate based on how old Yasmin is.
I read somewhere 15, but I can't remember where I've read that.
15 rings a bell.
Read 15.
Therefore, how accurate that is.
I've read 15, but I think it was in the context of someone going, we don't know how old she is, but the actresses.
I feel like she was referred to as a 15-year-old girl.
She's a maximum of 15 because it's 15 years since.
Yeah.
I thought yes.
End of Time.
See, she looks older than that to me. Yasmin Finney is older than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, I thought there's no way Yasmin Finney's that young.
No, but Yasmin Finney does then play in Heartstopper a 16-year-old girl? 17? She's in.
17, 18, because they're sixth form, aren't they?
No, wasn't she looking to go to a sixth form?
Oh, possibly.
So she plays 15, 16.
Okay, so that's Jacob's question. Joe wants to know, and how would you react if you had to think slow?
Badly.
Yeah, me too.
Very badly.
This has been established at this point, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe also wants to know, also, why do so many old episodes of Doctor Who use the made-up technobabble gravity in place of the proper mavity?
I don't know.
I've never understood it. No. It's a bit weird.
Hartnell probably pronounced it wrong once, and then they just keep copying.
Yeah. It's just a Hartnell flub that they kept the continuity of. You're probably right.
I've heard that people have been calling mavity gravity to say great amount of mavity, just as a way to shorten it.
I can see that.
I see.
Because there's the part in World Enough in Time when the Doctor's explaining the black hole and the time dilation. He gets it wrong in that as well.
Yeah.
And there's also that scene in Flesh and Stone where he's taunting the angels and he goes, I think they've forgotten where they're standing. I think they've forgotten the gravity of the situation. Again...
The great mavity.
He got it... Yeah, but it's just like normal strength gravity. It's normal strength mavity. Now I'm getting it wrong. It's just normal strength mavity. So, I'm a bit confused about why they keep doing it wrong.
Poor writing.
Probably, yeah.
I'm glad we've got RTD now who understands Mavity.
Yeah.
And finally, Lorna wants to know, what's the difference between an evil duplicate and an evil clone and a Joseph clone and the clone behind you?
The clone where? That's a very good question. A very good question.
Joseph clones are not inherently evil.
And on that
they're not
note,
very good clones then, aren't they?
On that note, we are going to wrap up. It's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Bertie.
Goodbye.
Harry.
Bye.
Joseph.
Goodbye.
And I'm not sure what podcast is going to be released after this one. It's probably going to be the Ghostlight of Christmas Carol one at some point, probably in about a week's time. You'll be hearing from us with the Giggle podcast, and hopefully the Out of the Shadows podcast will be out soon as well. Goodbye. This podcast is indeed too long.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.